And now I am here with Brandon Ralph. He is First VP, California Bank and Trust. How you doing, Brandon?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming down. You know, we were talking culture a little earlier and how to build a winning culture. And an ESOP, right, an employee stock ownership plan can be helpful. Am I right?
Yeah, it can change the culture of your business. ESOP-owned companies, which are essentially owned by the employees, definitely have a different feel.
Okay.
It kind of lends itself to a different type of owner because he's or she is selling his company to the employees, probably sacrificing a little bit of value to do that, but maintaining control, making sure his employees stay with the company, and his employees are now more invested. So if you're an employee of an ESOP company, everything you do creates value for the company, but it also creates value for you. So you'd notice a difference in culture. Our ESOP companies are noticeably different.
Well, let's talk about ESOP so we can break it down mechanics. I'm a C student, so you need to kind of break it down a little bit more for me. But so I'm an employer. I'm thinking it's time to wind it down, maybe take a few chips off the table. How do the mechanics work?
So there's a process laid out early on, because an ESOP, when you first hear about it, it can be pretty complicated. But when you simplify it, basically what happens is the employees of a company are represented by a trustee. A trustee approves a sale value or a sale price to buy the company from the owner, the selling, selling shareholder. So once that value is reached and agreed upon, typically what happens is a bank like California Bank and Trust comes in and gives the company a portion of the purchase price. So to use round numbers, if the company's worth $50 million, we may do, you know, half to 30%. So 25, 35, somewhere in there.
You would loan the company some money
to buy it from the owner.
Okay.
The remaining portion of that sales price, the, you know, 15 to 20 million that the bank didn't finance, the owner or the selling shareholder finances with a seller note.
Okay, kind of a owner carry back.
An owner carry back, exactly. Okay. So the owner continues to be on the board, be the CEO most likely if they were going in, because there's not a PE fund that comes in and says, hey, we want board seats, we want to change things, we want to look for synergies. He or she stays on. They're invested because they have to answer to their employees now. But also that selling, that seller carry back is virtually their retirement. What they built over their lifetime for that company is now owed to them. And once the senior loan is paid off, the CalBank and Trust loan, typically what we do is we reload and we say, we're going to refinance those seller notes. Everything went to plan. Now by year 4 or 5, the owner has all his chips off the table.
Okay. Yeah. So thinking about that, you know, is it pretty common for the owner to sell 100% of the company, or is it more common to give up less share?
So it's about 60 to 65% of the companies we see sell 100%.
Okay.
Mainly because the owner says, you know what, it's time for me to get my retirement off, take off what I built. But there's also a lot of companies that do 30%. And the significance of 30% is if you're a C Corp, the minimum requirement of a sale is 30% to offset your capital gains tax through a 1042 exchange. Similar to if you sold real estate and you put that money into other real estate, you don't have to pay capital gains tax right away.
So yeah, I'm gonna walk myself through that real quick. So if I sell 30% of my company, I can take those proceeds and roll them into another investment, another stock or asset class that's similar to my business and defer the tax. Because I've been just like an IRA or something like that.
Yeah, and the IRS, it's a good thing for the IRS because essentially what's happening is the companies are going, or the employees are going from most likely being on Social Security to now having a 401k-like vehicle. So they do things to promote ESOPs. One of those things that makes it more attractive than a strategic sale or a PE fund sale is this 30% 1042 exchange.
So thinking about this, so what companies is this most, you know, appropriate for. You mentioned a company that's worth $50 million. What if it's a company that's worth worth less? What's kind of the minimum threshold that you'd want to be?
You know, we've seen companies valued at $15 million.
Okay.
The senior debt or the bank debt portion is probably too small for most banks, including California Bank and Trust. Even though we've bid on some, we just we haven't got
it's not your sweet spot.
Yeah, it's not our sweet spot. But even a $15 million company, you can set up an ESOP, do all the administrative stuff you needed to do, and the owner could still walk away with, you know, $7-8 million.
Mm-hmm.
He may have to do a bigger portion of seller note because it's a smaller company. There's less financing available to him just because there's not as many banks that play in that level. But it's still doable at, I would say, even 10.
You say seller note. I mean, I'm thinking, is this like a 5-7 year term? How long is the note typically?
You know, from a bank's perspective, we just need to make sure it matures after we do. And we're typically 5 years. So
okay.
They're at 6-7, sometimes 8 years.
Okay. So the payback period is pretty quick.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the benefits of the seller note is that you can also get an interest payment on that note. So we see anywhere from 10 to 12%. So that seller is not getting no money. He's getting a current pay of, you know, a healthy interest rate.
Right, right. So what company...
It's actually more expensive than our debt.
Absolutely. Yeah. So is there a maximum rate that's typically charged? Because I'm thinking of it as like almost like mezz debt, right? It's subordinate to your guys' debt.
Very similar. It's fully subordinated. You know, we'll allow principal payments if there's extra cash flow. But typically we like to say, look, let's keep that note at the face value until we mature. But let's keep them current with the interest rate. I would think that 12% is probably the high end, mainly because the trustee for the company has to say, can the company afford this?
Yes.
Is this hurting the employees if we go 13-14%?
Right. Yeah, you bet. So companies, $15 million valuation on the low end. What's the high end?
You know, I think that a $300 million valuation for an ESOP would be big.
Okay.
Yeah, we did one of the biggest in California this year. CBT did the senior loan, and that got valued at like $298 million.
Okay, so it's sort of a pretty big range that you guys focus on. Who, besides the, you know, obviously you've got to have a valuation. You've got to be profitable. You've got to be something that can be, you know, get a good appraisal. Who should not do this? Like, who does this not fit for?
You know, it probably doesn't fit someone who is building a company that hasn't gotten anywhere close to what the end value is, meaning they want to scale through some new technology. They want to innovate. They need, you know, 5 or 8 years more of runway, which most likely, because it's an early stage company, is going to be a younger owner. So it's
just
probably not,
yeah,
it's probably not for them. You know, there's other industries that ESOP may work for, but it doesn't really happen as much because there's more demand from PE funds or strategic buyers. High tech.
Right.
There's a lot of PE funds. It's a sexy industry to be in. So it'd make more sense to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Thinking about valuation of companies, right? So some of these high-flying, fast-growing software companies that maybe aren't that profitable yet, they may get a multiple of revenue, mm-hmm. whereby, you know, as you guys evaluate this stuff, provide valuations, I'm assuming it's a multiple of earnings typically. Is that right?
Yeah, we look at EBITDA multiples.
Okay.
So in conjunction with our evaluation, because I get a new package, I meet a management team, I go in and value the company. I do a 10-year projection, you know, discount cash flow back today, look at comps. But there's also a third party that's doing a valuation that's required by the IRS.
And if it's sounding too technical, our audience out there, okay, so if you're making $10 million a year in profit and you get a 5x multiple, your company's worth $50 million bucks, right?
Yes.
So it's kind of a multiplier of the amount of money you're making,
yes.
Right? Okay. So, but the other thing you said at the beginning of the conversation was you're going to take a little bit of a haircut in the valuation, right? If a strategic comes in, if somebody comes in that's in your industry and wants to buy you, mm-hmm. strategically, or a private equity firm comes in and wants to jump in the game, they're going to give a little bit higher valuation typically than what your employees will give you.
Correct. Okay. And that's really driven by the fact that with a strategic and a PE fund or any private buyer, there's probably going to be a bidding process.
Okay.
Because there's more than one strategic buyer for any company out there, most likely. There's more than one PE fund for any company out there. But there's only one ESOP. There's only one buyer when you're selling to your employees.
There's no way to create a bidding war between...
No, you may have one investment bank or one consultant that says, I think your company's worth slightly more than the last guy who stepped in here. So there's that that you have to take into consideration, but you're not bidding it. So the multiples aren't going to get as high, but the flip side of that coin is because there's not a bidding process, because you have one buyer, once they've agreed, once the trustee has said, no, this seems like a fair value, the rate of execution is, you know, near 100%.
The chance of falling out during due diligence and so on is minimal.
Yeah, there's not going to be a strategic manager or a PE fund director coming in saying, hey, I don't like the projections. We need to back them up a little bit. Or we need some information that you don't have, and we know you don't have it, so we kind of want this to stall because maybe there's option C and D for us.
Well, let's say I'm running a process. I've hired an investment banker. I'm gonna sell my company, and there's some strategics that are interested, and you know they're gonna pay 7 or 8 times, right? Something like that is where the bidding is at. Now, if I have a backup process running on the ESOP side, how much less might I get from the ESOP? If the true valuation out there at the market level is 7 or 8 times earnings, what's the earn? What's it for?
Probably
the
5 or 6. I would think.
Okay, a couple of turns.
Yeah,
lower.
A couple of turns lower to be just kind of a rule of thumb.
Okay,
they're always going to be more conservative. So yeah, you are losing a little bit of value, but. I think what's attractive about it is that once you get that value, you know, that's what it's going to close at.
You bet. And then you were also bringing up the other advantage of some of the money that I get out is I could take it out tax deferred, whereby it's harder to do that if you're selling to a strategic.
Yeah, the IRS doesn't necessarily want to incentivize the PE funds the same way or incentivize a seller to go with the PE fund, but they do want to incentivize them to sell to their employees.
So in the end, it might be just a bit. You sell for a little less to your employees, so you get the benefit there of, you know, helping the employees out, doing the right thing by the people that have helped you grow the business, but yet you might even net out something similar, or am I missing something?
I mean, one of the analyses that these investment banks do and consultants do, and we do it too, is compare a PE buyout and a strategic buyout to an ESOP buyout. And at that 30% level, it's pretty close. Offsetting capital gains tax is big. But there's a lot of things you can do on the other side too. So I would say in general, you can maybe make up for another turn in that with the 1042 exchange.
So typically if I'm an owner and I'm going through I'm this wrestling match in my mind of like, look, I'm not going to be doing this for the next 30 years. I've got another 5 to 7 years in me. And I'm comparing and contrasting like criteria might go into my decision?
Well, for one thing, with an ESOP, you can make contributions to the ESOP. You can make contributions to the employees to buy more shares. When you do that, you can expense it through your income statement and offset your taxable income. Okay. So what you can do is say, instead of paying the IRS my taxes, my federal and state income taxes, I'll pay my employees with more shares. So that's attractive. And if that's something that appeals to you, that could be something that moves the needle towards ESOPs.
Yeah. Now, as a guy that's trying to, here in our hometown, I'm trying to ignite an entrepreneurial revolution, right? I'm trying to help businesses succeed if I can. And it seems to me, and I don't have any facts, maybe you do, the ESOPs, companies that are owned either all or partially by their employees, they seem to have a different success level on average, right? Because the employees, we talked about culture, the employees are very engaged. They're the owners. We've somehow got them thinking like owners because they are owners, and the chances of them succeeding might be greater than just the run-of-the-mill company.
Yeah, there's a lot of research on this, and there's probably 4 or 5 different metrics that if you compare comparable companies, one an ESOP, one not, you're going to see better performance, efficiency, profitability, retention, obviously, growth in an ESOP company.
Okay.
And if you think about it, it makes sense because those employees, you know, they're every time the company gets revalued at the end of every year to determine the share price, what their value is worth, everything they do is increasing that share price. So it's increasing their retirement. It's increasing their ownership.
Value. Now, are there any horror stories with doing an ESOP where like, oh, we went down that path and you know what? It was a huge mistake.
What kind of pitfalls? The only horror story I've heard like that has been it took longer than I thought. And that's driven by A, who you pick to run the deal, what investment bank. There's a couple good ones in California that I think middle market companies should know about. That's Ambrose Capital, okay. Ambrose Advisors. Chartwell Capital is another really good investment bank. They're conservative. Lazier Capital, based in Columbus, does a lot of stuff out here. And they're really good at giving you a realist expectation. But if you don't get that, if you get someone who comes in and says, hey, your company's worth, you know, $7 or $8 million more than that last guy told you, and you go with them, then you can invest a lot of time. You get to this valuation and it's not what you thought it would be. So you try to do things to change it. You say, well, let's get another month of earnings in our belt and see if that can bump the valuation, things like that. And you keep doing this and you're pregnant at that point, yeah, because you've invested so much in it and you never get the valuation that you want. So you wipe your hands of it.
Yeah. And that's the horror story. Okay, so let's take the other side of that. So we all know that, you know, there's horror stories if you go PE, private equity, or you sell to a strategic. We all know those deals stall out, and, you know, there's
a lot of them end up as ESOPs.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. You see all kinds of catastrophes. People, your competition ends up knowing all about your company and all this other kind of stuff. But thinking about what a win looks like, you know, any success stories you can share?
Yeah, we got a company that is a commercial landscaping company. And they've grown from the ground up. It's one owner, essentially. It's based in Central California. They went through a process with a couple different investment banks, looked at a couple different options, ended up as an ESOP. We met them. Their current bank didn't want to do the ESOP just because there's a lot of nuance to it. If you just hear the word and you don't know how many parties are involved and what they all mean, it could be overwhelming. So it gave us an opportunity. We did the senior loan. The owner carried a note. And we said, look, if your company exceeds expectations and you're able to pay us back as scheduled, we'll commit to another pay down on your seller note. And they did. Employees were incentivized, energized by the ESOP. Virtually all of the regions that they operate in were growing. They were buying new equipment, getting new customers, big universities, big multifamily operators. And sure enough, you know, they were there. And the CFO is a really conservative guy, so he's put it on hold. But as soon as they're ready, he's going to take another $1 million off the table.
Wow, exciting stuff. So just final question, as we think about advice to people who might be contemplating these issues, talking to the entrepreneurial community around the region, just closing thoughts or advice to anybody who could be chasing this kind of dream?
Yeah, I think if you're a middle market company, you care about your employees, but you want to have some monetary reward for building this thing, an ESOP is a good vehicle to do that. It keeps your employees working. It keeps you on the board. It keeps you in your current position. And I think it sets a really good tone for your business.
Yeah, very cool. I want to thank you for coming on the show, Brandon. Thank you for what you're doing for the entrepreneurial community, helping us to grow our business in a way that most of us don't know that much about. So thanks for sharing your wisdom today.
Yeah, happy to do it.
You bet. Thanks. If you like our entrepreneurial stories, if you like the messages that we bring that inspire, if you want a little more Mark Haney, not everybody does, but if you do, feel free to subscribe. Feel free to be part of our community, engage, comment, share. I want to get to know you better. You want to get to know me better. Follow me on all our social media platforms at The Mark Haney. I look forward to knowing you better. And let's get to know each other better so we can help build these businesses that we love.